The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
Well, how the devil does that is he mimics your deceased relative. Devils are observing all of us, and they've been observing all of us since Adam and Eve. They are experts at observation of humankind. They know exactly what your Uncle Joe did for a living. They know that how he used to tug on your hair in that special way. They know how your Aunt Emma used to hum while she was baking pies. They know all this stuff. This is a cakewalk for Satan.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Sue Brinkman. She's going to be joining me in just a moment here. And I've been reading her blog recently. I want to talk about Prince Harry and Meghan. I want to talk about the New Age movement. I want to take a look at certain type of healings. There's a lot to get into here. And you are welcome to join me, too. You know, feel free to dial in anytime and talk to Sue and talk to me. The number is 888-914-9149. There was a Pew Research study that was done a little while ago that showed that 62% of all Americans hold belief in reincarnation. They hold the belief in astrology, which I just think is so wacky, right? They hold belief in psychics and or the presence of a spiritual energy in physical objects like mountains or trees, right? They worship those things. These New Age beliefs, they're present even in those who self-identify as Christians. And that should be really troubling. And maybe you've got a loved one that's into crystals or into tarot cards or in the mediums or any of this type of stuff. It saddens me to know that Catholics buy into some of this. There was a study that found that 70% of Catholics, 70%, 70, subscribe to one or more of those beliefs. You know what that says to me as I sit back? I was thinking about this as I was getting ready for my broadcast today. I thought, how's that possible? How's it possible that 70% of Catholics buy into that stuff? It's wacky. Really? I mean, if you know your faith, you're certainly not going to buy into that. And you're also going to be very sensitive and aware of the reality of the demonic, of the dark side, of the great deception, the great diabolic disorientation that's going on. Yet 70% of Catholics. And then I took a breath and I thought, you know what? If 73% of Catholics don't believe in the true presence, why does that surprise you, Drew? Huh? Why does that surprise you? And again, let me tell you what these are. 70% of Catholics believe in reincarnation. You die, you come back as, you know, a dog, a goat, you know, a cow, another person. Who knows, right? Astrology. Psychics. You know, spiritual energy and physical objects. And you wonder why we're having trouble in the church today. I mean, women, believe it or not, are more likely to hold those beliefs. 70% of them. Compared to 55% of men and adults under age 65. But those who have not graduated from college are radical and ethnic minorities. And believe it or not, Democrats and those who lean towards the Democratic Party are more than likely than others to hold at least one of those New Age beliefs. And I'm not being partisan. I'm just giving you the facts, right? I know you know Sue Brinkman. She's been a friend of this program for a long time. She's a very gifted writer. She's a woman who came out of a book, and I want to get you plugged into it, but she's an award-winning journalist, a member of the Third Order, a member of the Third Order of Discalced Carmelites, and she's also the Director of Communications and New Age Research for Women of Grace, and she's going to be stopping by here. I want to get you up to speed on her book as well, and I hope you'll check it out, but she wrote a couple different blogs. One struck me. Now, I don't know how, if you follow the royals at all. Prince Henry had a confession recently about the use of EMDR therapy. I know you might have heard about that, but you not know what it is. And because he commented about it, it spawned a rush of interest in this therapy, as well as a lot of questions about its roots and whether or not it's suitable for Christians. And I think he was doing an appearance with Oprah Winfrey, and they were doing something on mental health. And he said that he uses that therapy. You know, and it stands for eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing, EMDR. It helps him deal with certain traumatic memories. Now, there will probably be several people saying, hey, Drew, it does work, you know. The question I have, is it New Age, and can Catholics use it? Sue Brinkman joins me today. We'll dive into this and a whole lot of other stuff. Feel free to join us as well. Sue, good afternoon.
Nice to be with you again, Drew.
Always great. Hey, thank you for your work. I when I saw this story and I heard about Meghan Markle and I saw so many other things you're writing, I thought, you know, we definitely need to talk about this. There's this debate over the Eucharist and revitalizing it. Catholics don't believe in true presence, unfortunately. A majority of them don't. So, you know, why does it surprise me so many people will buy into so much hocus pocus? Fill me in EMDR, because I could have sworn I had somebody call my show before and said, hey, this is the real deal, and it does work. So what is it? Is it New Age? Can Christians use it? My understanding, it is okay.
It is okay. You're right. And the person who called in is correct. It is okay. I'm sure that there's people out there putting a New Age spin on it, but eye movement desensitization reprocessing, which is EMDR, that is actually a almost well-proven therapy for people who have had trauma and have bad memories in that. And what it is, it's a form of psychotherapy. Used to treat anxiety disorders, and it was discovered in 1987 by a psychology graduate student named Francine Shapiro. She noticed that when she would have upsetting thoughts, if she moved her eyes back and forth rapidly, mm-hmm. side to side, which is known as bilateral stimulation, that those thoughts didn't bother her as much. Now, you could use things such as tapping your foot, tapping your finger, which is something that Prince Harry said he does also along with it, in addition to moving his eyes back and forth. They actually have done quite a few studies on this, and they have found that, yes, it does work. The main controversy about it is how it works. They're not quite sure how it works, only that this bilateral stimulation somehow gives the brain new information about that trauma that distracts it from the memory of the trauma. For instance, let's say getting into a blue car after having a bad accident in a blue car. Mm-hmm. The brain stores it in the same place as the original trauma. So anytime you would get into a blue car, you would remember your accident. And these triggers can result in making things as normal as a blue car feel very dangerous to you. So what in a session, the EMDR clinician will bring up this EMDR, use this bilateral stimulation of the eyes back and forth while having you remember that, and that kind of triggers the brain to see something else besides the trauma, and it sort of distracts it from that. That's the way I understand it to work. And it enables you to begin to tell the brain that this is not happening anymore. This blue car is not the accident that I was in. I'm in different circumstances now. It's not happening to me anymore. And it works. It actually does work. So the bad thing, though, about this whole show that he was on, this is a docuseries that he was on, is that Meghan Markle is teaching him other stuff that isn't good. So when you couple that with the EMDR, people are going to think, well, he's doing the EMDR, and that's okay. Well, how about this ancestral healing, which is based in animism? And this is where you go to your ancestors, you try to connect with your dead ancestors to repair and nurture relationships with them, with your ancestors. And the underlying premise to that is that humans carry burdens from their ancestors within their own families and bodies, so that they have to undergo this lineage repair process. I don't know how people dream this stuff up, Drew. I don't know. They must lay awake at night thinking about this stuff. But you can relieve these burdens by contacting these relatives. And the only prerequisite to it is that you have to have some experience in guided trance, dream work, and the use of spirit guides. So the minute you see that, you know, okay, here we go. Now we're off the rails. But EMDR is okay, but some of the other stuff that is being promoted by Prince Harry and Meghan Markle is not okay.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, you talk about EMDR, but then you also talk about EFT. What is that?
Emotional Freedom Technique. That's tapping. And it's almost a kind of EMDR. It's also a psychotherapy, used in psychotherapy. But Emotional Freedom Technique is where they tap on meridian points. And that tapping of the meridian points is supposedly helps to distract you from trauma, bad memories, helps to work with anxiety disorders. The only problem with that, and there's been tons of testing done in EFT, there's no tests that tell you that the tapping has anything to do with the success of it. It's the other things that are used with it, like cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, CBT, which we all know works, and other aspects of EFT that could work. That they believe that is what's making these studies come out to be successful and has nothing to do with tapping, which, of course, the tapping cannot work because meridians are based on a belief in energy that doesn't exist. So it can't work.
Let's do this. Let's grab a call or two. If you want to join us, the number's 888-914-9149. Larry is listening in Chicago. He's got a story to share with you, Sue. Good afternoon, Larry.
Oh, good afternoon, Sue and Drew. 18 years ago this fall, I buried my mom and dad 7 weeks apart. May they rest in peace. And I was traumatized, to say the least. So I looked into grief therapy, and I found a therapist who did EMDR. And I did it for a couple of years. I think it was $70 per session. And it was like being hypnotized wide awake with a colored tip stick. I think I had lime green. And it was fascinating. And I do know that he would only do it every 2 weeks because that's all I could take. It took 2 weeks to recover. And I asked someone in the office, I said, how long does it take you, another patient? He said, oh, at least 2 weeks.
All right. Wow. Well, hey, thanks for sharing that. I'm sorry for your loss, Larry.
Yes. Yeah, it took 2 weeks to recover. So I'm hoping, Larry, that you did get some good out of it. Do you think it worked?
Yeah. Yeah, it really did, because I was waking up every morning thinking, I got to face the world another day. And one morning I woke up and I changed it to, the world has to face me another day. I don't have to face it.
Well, that's good news. I'm glad that worked for you then.
Yeah, Larry,
thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Would you recommend this? I know we're going to be dealing with a lot of New Age stuff. There's stuff that does cross a line. You say this is good. Would you recommend this therapy to people? I mean, how much do you know about it?
I would. I would recommend it. I don't have a problem with EMDR, and I've never had a problem with EMDR. I've been kind of looking into it for like the past 7 or 8 years now, and watching the research as it progresses. They are studying this very seriously, and these are well put together studies. They're methodologically sound studies. In other words, they're not being put together by people who are promoting EMDR. It's objective science, and that's what I always look for when I'm researching things. So I don't have a problem with EMDR. It could, somebody can introduce something strange to you in there while you're doing an EMDR session, but the EMDR itself is safe.
All right, we'll go to Marie in Wisconsin next. Marie, good afternoon. You are on the air.
Hi. My name is Marie, and I asked 5 clergymen about this. Okay, I do hatha yoga, H-A-T-H-A yoga. They told me it's okay as long as you use it as a physical exercise. I
hatha
don't
yoga.
Use it as a religion. Mm-hmm. Hatha yoga, H-A-T-H-A yoga.
Okay. Yeah, most of the yogas today are hatha. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And I asked 5 clergymen, they said, you're fine unless, don't use it as a religion, or don't use it like, you go in and find your inner being and everything. But this is a form of exercise that has very good for my anxiety and very good for my cardiology problems. And I was wondering what your take is on hatha yoga.
All right. Yeah, good question.
Yeah, hatha yoga, that's a branch of yoga most yoga out there is hatha yoga. It involves breath, body, mind, meditation, and the yoga poses. And I am not a yoga fan, I'll be honest with you. There's people out there, and I think there's a good argument on both sides of this particular issue. I think both sides have good, solid arguments, and they have good people behind them. Very prestigious people, bishops and priests who there's a lot of bishops and priests who are not for yoga. And in my opinion, it's why risk it? That's just the way I look at it. I like to play it safe in my life, Why risk it if you don't have to? It's an isometric exercise. You get the same cardiological advantage from doing any kind of isometric exercise. It does not have to be yoga. It just happens to be that yoga is the most prevalent out there. It's the easiest to link up to. You could be doing Pilates. You could be doing a lot of different things. It doesn't have to be yoga. So, I mean, that's one thing that I would tell you about it. The other thing that worries me is if you're in a class, and even though the yoga poses, as we know, and this comes from the yogis themselves, many of them were designed as positions of worship to Hindu gods. Now, even though you don't intend to worship a Hindu god, you're just in there for exercise. What if the guy next to you is summoning a Hindu god, and you're not in a state of grace? You're open game to that spirit, because the devil doesn't play fair. He could care less what your intentions are. And if you're not in a state of grace, you could become oppressed by that spirit. He could enter that room very easily. They come when they're called. They come when they're called. And that's the other reason I would never go into a yoga class, ever, because you don't know what the people next to you are doing in that class. You don't know if they're calling on those gods. And we all know that gods don't exist, and the fathers of our church teach us that demons hide behind those names, and they answer when you call upon them. So I don't know. Do you want to take the risk? That's the way I look at it.
Well, I get it on YouTube. I get it on YouTube, and I show it on my own. I don't go to class or anything.
I certainly wouldn't recite any mantra. You know, don't they say Namaste?
No, not at all.
Do all those. I would, you know, if you're going to do it, use the word Jesus.
I think the Yama is crazy. I mean, but I just like the basic poses, because most of the basic poses you find after warm up and cool downs after. Right. You know,
yeah, and you could do things like Soul Core or Pietra Fitness that would actually incorporate the rosary and prayer in it, and that's the same kind of a core workout that you would get from the yoga. So there are other options out there.
If you have any kind of misgivings,
act on that.
Susan, I heard the same thing. Some of my colleagues on the air said, "Hey, you know, yoga's okay if you just use it for exercise." But I also understand what you're saying here, where there is a fine line when you begin to look at some of the body postures. Are they forms of worship to these Hindu deities? You know, the mantras that you sometimes recite. Is somebody calling upon this false spirit? I mean, those are things you have to be careful about. But you have no problem with Pilates. And maybe you can give a plug for the other alternatives that are out there. There are options that people can use. When you share them again?
Yeah, Soul Core is one, SOULCORE. And although some of those poses look like yoga, the body can only move in so many different directions. So every move that looks like a downward dog isn't necessarily a downward dog, you know. So in Soul Core, that is completely yoga-free. The people who put it together have nothing to do with yoga. Pietra Fitness is another option that's out there. My personal preference is for Soul Core. I have those workouts. They are very difficult. I will tell you that. They're not easy. Great core workouts, and you can say the rosary while you're doing it. So a lot of meditation, beautiful Catholic meditation that goes along with each decade of the rosary. It's just a really an all-around great experience to do something like Soul Core. Nothing like a yoga.
My guest today is Sue Brinkman. If you want to join us, the number's 888-914-9149. We're taking a look at really the new age and a whole lot of different things, everything from therapies that are legitimate, and some people worry might cross the line, to yoga, to blanking prayer, to astral projection. There's a lot going on. Feel free to join us anytime. 888-914-9149. We'll take another call or two. And again, Sue is not a physician, so I see some calls on the screen. I don't know whether these are germane to what we're talking about. They want some of your advice on, I think, ADHD, which is pretty common. Maria, I'll bring you on, though. Go right ahead. Maria in California, go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Drew. I sure enjoy your show. Yes, even though she's not a therapist, but I wanted to know if she knew what would be the best therapy for a youngster who is 16 and has ADHD, inattentive, and hyper.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I really can't give that kind of medical advice, but I can refer you to CatholicTherapist.com. And they are very well screened. Allison Ricciardi is the head of that. Yeah. She's a good friend of our ministry at Women of Grace. And you just plug in there what your location is, and they will refer you to Catholic therapists in your area. And I would direct that question to them, because I think they would be better able to handle it than I would.
Yeah, she was on the air with us yesterday. So again, CatholicTherapist.com, a good group. I want to talk to you about mind-blanking prayer. I mean, a lot of kids, you know, we see what's happening in the schools today, right? A lot of children are attending Catholic, public and Catholic schools. We see a lot of this different stuff that our kids are being taught, critical race theory and whole litany of other things, you know, gender. But I get concerned when we see stuff like mind-blanking prayer making its way into Catholic, you know, primary schools. And I know you wrote about a case in Australia. Do this for me. Just explain what mind-blanking prayer is, and then when we come back, because I have to take a short pause, we can talk about it.
Yeah, mind-blanking prayer is just you're using a mantra or a word, and you recite that word to drive out of your mind all thoughts and inspirations. And you what you're trying to do is achieve a mental void. And that mental void is supposed to facilitate an altered state of consciousness, which is used to then gain enlightenment. by all Hindu right. and Buddhist practitioners. That's exactly what mind-blanking prayer is. And, it's infesting our schools.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. This might be new to you. You may never have heard about mind-blanking prayer.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me today. I am speaking with Sue Brinkman, and we're taking a look at a widespread spectrum of issues, from sage burning to mind-blanking prayer to astral projection. It seems like this new age stuff is becoming more and more common. More people are beginning to accept it. And of course, we'll take your calls. If you want to get in, the number's 888-914-9149. Before I get into the mind-blanking prayer, which you need to know about, or even sage burning, which is really becoming popular, let's jump back to the phones. I know Alejandra has been waiting for a little while in Los Angeles and has a question for you. Good afternoon, Alejandra.
Hello. Hello, family in Christ. I was wondering, because I have family members that they lost their my sister-in-law, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, and my son. And my question was, I don't do it, but I know my family in-laws, they do it. They always go to the cemetery, and they always ask them for help most of the time. And I had told them that it's okay, but it's better we just go straight to God or to our Virgin Mary. And it seems that they feel more comfortable just going straight to the family member that are deceased. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's a very good question. Thank you for that. Yeah, what they're doing there is known as invoking. They are asking those relatives to intercede for them to God. Okay, they're asking them to do that. As long as they understand that they're not asking that relative to do something for them, but to do something according to God's will, and if God should facilitate it through them. That's called invoking. Evoking is what mediums do who contact the dead, and that's where they're demanding that they appear and they do something like speak to them, move objects or something like that. That's called evoking. So invoking is what we are allowed to do, and that means we're asking for their intercession. If they should want to go to the cemetery, if that makes them feel closer to that loved one, that's fine to go and pray at their gravesite and ask them for their intercession. There's really nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Just knowing that the power to do anything is going to come from God. It's not going to come from that ancestor. It's merely the ancestor is merely like a go-between that they're using to get help from God.
Yeah, we're all part of the communion of saints. So here's how I read it, because, I turn to the blesseds all the time. I turn to the venerables. Mm-hmm. I turn to those who've gone before us. We ask the saints for their intercession. There is a difference between, as you point out, evoking divination. I mean, the church is pretty clear when it comes to trying to conjure spirits or mm-hmm. conjure, consulting the dead through mediumship or, through whatever other, clairvoyance or any other recourse to mediums, whatever it might be. You know what I'm saying? Seances is the word I'm looking for. That's wrong. Any wish to conciliate hidden powers, it goes against our duty to honor, respect, and love God, who we owe that to God alone. So the church comes out in the catechism very clearly about divination, but calling upon those who've gone before us, asking their intercession before the throne of God. Saint Faustina promised when she died that she would pull back the veil of heaven. She said she would continue her mission there before the throne of God, and she would intercede for us so that we would no longer wound the most merciful heart of our Lord by our distrust. Saint Therese of Lisieux said the same thing. So many saints, we see this happen. So there is a difference there, and I don't have a problem with somebody going to the cemetery and saying, hey, can you intercede for me on that issue? I think it's an important one. So thank you for your call. Time ticks by, and I do want to get back to mind-blanking prayers. I want to make people aware of things that are happening that is not reported in the mainstream media, and I'm grateful for your blog, because I know that you are covering this issue. But let's get back to mind-blowing prayer. You said it is infesting schools right now, in particular Catholic schools. There's this thing called centering prayer. There are mantras that people repeat. why are kids doing mind blanking prayer? Explain how it works and what the dangers of it are.
Okay, mind blanking, as I said, that's where you use a mantra or a word to drive away all your thoughts. That's Hindu, Buddhist, that's their forms of prayer. And the way that it's getting into our schools right now is through mindfulness meditation, which is Buddhist. And they use different forms of Buddhist meditation in order to blank the mind, such as focusing on your breath, focusing on the different parts of your body. The problem with this is that mind blanking, that's designed to bring about a trance-like or hypnotic state, also known as an altered state of consciousness. And in that state, you know, rational judgment, discernment is suspended. Mm-hmm. The mind is highly suggestible, open to any influences that might be present. Do you really want your kids sitting in school? And they're not doing this for 2 to 3 minutes to settle down after or before a class. They're actually sitting there for 15 to 20 minutes.
Wow.
In mind-blanking prayer. This is not healthy for them. It's not good. As a matter of fact, the American Center for Law and Justice, which is headed up by Jay Sekulow, they have actually started to send letters to different public schools warning them. They have these programs like Goldie Hawn's Mind Up program and that sort of thing,
right,
warning them that they are possibly violating the Establishment Clause by having something, a Buddhist-based prayer, in their schools. And, of course, they come back and they say, but, well, no, we're not doing the prayer part. We've made it secular. And they're saying, no, it's not possible for it to be secularized. It's the mindfulness is the seventh step in the Noble Eightfold Path. It comes directly from Buddhism. And these lawyers just laugh at them and say, hey, come on, come up with something better, because this is definitely the advancement of a religion in those schools, and you just can't do that. Now, after they started to write these letters, what happened is a lot of these organizations that sell those programs through, they actually went, and this was told to me by one of the ACLJ assistant counsels, Christina Stierhoff, they actually went in there and scrubbed their websites,
mm-hmm,
to take the Buddhist language off of the website, and they substituted scientific language in there instead. So this is, and mindfulness has had this problem all the way across the board, right from the beginning. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's the pioneer of it, he was very much into Buddhism. He was a practicing Buddhist at the time. And he said he bent over backwards. Those were his words. I bent over backwards to hide the Buddhist origins of mindfulness because he didn't want to be called a New Age kook.
Wow.
And this eventually came out, and everybody figured it out that it was Buddhist. But I'll tell you, it's subterfuge. And the fact that it's being put into schools, our children are being exposed to mind-blanking prayer, which, as I said, suspends rational judgment, discernment, and it leaves you open to suggestion. Any teacher there could be suggesting, and look at all the stuff that they have in school, the CRT, all these other things. Imagine what they can be suggesting to your child while they're sitting in there supposedly, oh yeah, just becoming, you know, quieted down and you know,
wow,
just quiet before our class begins. No, it's a lot more than that, and it needs to be stopped. And parents need to stand up and do something about it.
And I'm glad some parents are, and I'm glad you're writing about, mm-hmm, it. I mean, the Catechism of the Catholic Church is really clear, and you know, it forbids, and forbids a strong word, it explicitly lists efforts of concentration to reach a mental void as an erroneous notion of prayer.
Yep.
That's what Catechism 2726 says. And you can check that out. So using mantras, which are common forms of, you know, common to Eastern forms of meditation that strive to blank the mind, if this is happening in your school, be aware of it. And we're seeing more and more of this, aren't we? I'm surprised. It you know, why we're not seeing in Catholic schools more Eucharistic adoration, right? Why aren't we seeing more traditional prayer like the Rosary? Why do we have to turn to Eastern mysticism, to Buddhism, to those types of practices today? What are people missing or lacking that they tend to think this will somehow fill?
It's trendy. That's trendy. Everybody wants to be hip. You know, Jesus is passe right now, Drew.
Yeah.
You know, and our forms of prayer, they're not interested in it. Teresian prayer, you can learn centering prayer. Now, centering prayer is really just transcendental meditation in disguise. They just use a Christian word, like the name of Jesus or some other word. But what they're doing with that, they're using it as a mantra. and they're using it to blank the mind. So what's the difference between that and TM? Nothing. There is no difference. But they like to say, oh, no, no, it isn't. We're preparing ourselves for prayer. No, you're not. If you're sitting in a mental void for 20 minutes using your mantra and blanking your mind, that is not prayer. Just as you quoted from the catechism, that is an erroneous notion of prayer. Christian prayer is always a dialogue with God. It's a back and forth. The last thing you want to do is to be blanking your mind, because he may be giving you inspirations and trying to lead you into higher stages of prayer, and what you're doing is rejecting him and you're pushing him aside. So it's actually holding you back to be using these mantras.
The thing I worry about is the enemy. You know, if he knows you're in a susceptible state like that, who knows, you know, what he's going to try to do. My guest today, Sue Brinkman. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. If you're on hold, I will get you on the air. A lot of different questions here for you. But before let's do this. Let's go to Rosa. I was going to talk about whether or not sage burning is compatible with Catholicism. But I think Rosa, actually, she's got a question about that. I think her priest told her to burn sage. Hey, Rosa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yes. I had my parish priest bless my house after a long time of trying to get him here. We've had several things happening in the house, though. I just really wanted the house to be blessed. And, you know, I asked him, I have... a person living in my building who is a very lovely person and everything, and says believes in God, but she sages every Wednesday. I don't know what that means. But she sages and she says prayers and stuff like that while I'm, you know, on another floor blessing the house with holy water and praying and everything, and praying with you every day. Thank you for that. But okay, so the priest blessed the house from top to bottom. Several days later, I had somebody come and visit me who had kidnapped some people. I'm not kidding. This is not funny, but and I was not aware of it. It happened to be a friend of mine, and had a couple youngsters in his possession. So I found out. I called the police. It was so bad. It was so bad. It was so bad in my house. I thought, you know, this person was going to kill me. So then a couple days after that, when all was said and done and the children went back with their mom, something was standing next to me. I was kind of falling asleep. Well, it was
Rosa, let me do this just for the sake of time. You brought up two really important things I do want to get to. One, a smudging and the burning of sage, but also for your home. If I was you, I'd get a priest back in there again. Get that house blessed. I would also get sacramentals like blessed salt and blessed water and use them frequently. If there is an infestation in the building or if there is something in the house you need to be aware of, you know, pray for that. And certainly, you know, I get the authority of the priesthood in there to bless that room. But I want to get to your point here, and I want to go ahead and talk a little bit about this. You heard her saying, hey, this person sages every Wednesday. Sage burning or smudging is becoming more and more common, and people want to kind of cleanse their home on a spiritual level. And I know they think that burning a weed in the house, you know, is going to do the trick. You know, sage burning is very different than the way I think we as Catholics should handle this. But let me let you explain it, Susan, if you could, and we could talk about how it's being used now and, again, why this is becoming incredibly accepted.
Yeah, smudging is a very common Native American practice, and it's intended to spiritually cleanse a person, a home, an animal, or an object in order to bring them into harmony with the universe. It is a shamanistic belief that is based on this belief that every object in creation, even those that are inanimate, have a spirit. Now, smudging is performed with smoke that's derived from the burning of herbs such as sage. You can also use lavender, pine, cedar. And they believe that the smoke attaches itself to negative energy, and as the smoke clears, it takes the negative energy with it. So smudging, you know, would be you wave it around and you fan the swirls around a person or an object or a room. New Agers believe that by smudging, when fanned through energy fields, that cleanses vibrations. It attracts positive energy. It attracts healing. It attracts protection. In other words, it's a superstition. This practice is very superstitious. People believe that the cleansing quality of smudging enables you to communicate directly with the spirit world. People are encouraged to smudge when their spirits are low, if they've been around someone who is sick or depressed through meditation and prayer. So, you know, we don't need smudging to cleanse ourselves. We have confession. That's what the sacrament of reconciliation is. And that is spiritual cleansing par excellence, right? So we don't really need to do that. You should not get involved in smudging. As I said, it is a shamanistic practice. It's really not, it's not the Christian worldview. It's not based in a Christian worldview, and you really shouldn't be doing it at all. It doesn't do anything. This is nothing but superstition.
Do you know how true that is? I had a guest on the air years ago. I think he wrote a book called, was it The Devil on Brownsville Road? It was something on Brownsville Road. The Demon on Brownsville Road. And this guy's home was literally, there was a very dark spirit in there. They found out years later that this place was back in the 1920s and 30s. A doctor owned it. He would do illegal abortions on the second floor, and bizarre things happened. The walls bled, and lights would turn on and off, and you know, just the anger, the violence in the home was pretty amazing. So, this guy was not Catholic at the time, so he called in like a shaman. You know, that looks pretty cool. The guy came in, had his sage, walked around the house, did his thing, blew the smoke. Nothing happened, right? Nothing at all happened.
Big surprise.
Sometimes it does abate for a couple of days or maybe even a week, but then it comes back with a fury. To keep that story short, because I could spend an hour telling you his story. Fast forward, he went through Protestant ministers. He went through a whole lot of things. He ended up having to get a Catholic priest into that home, and you know, they had the house, you know, exorcised, and it was pretty profound what ultimately happened there. It's also a massacre on the front yard of that home in the early days of the settlement, so there was some darkness that surrounded that particular place. But smudging did nothing, and I go back to anyone who has disturbances in their homes. If it's not as intense as the demon on Brownsville Road, maybe there are, you know, there's anger, or there's other divisive spirits, or there's other things that are happening in that house. You know, have your house blessed. That's the number one thing to do. Mm-hmm. I have holy water. I use it every day before I go on the air in my radio studio, right? I bless salt is another thing. Don't burn a weed and take it room to room. Sprinkle the holy water. Use the blessed salt. Tap into the power of the church. That's where you're going to find your true freedom. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, our lines are stacked here, Suzanne. We'll just jump into the calls. We'll take everyone's calls, try to answer their questions, okay? My guest, Sue Brinkman, and you can check her out. We'll put a link up for her site and all of her articles and her blog on our Twitter account, at Drew Mariani Show. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
So first off, yoga originates with Hinduism, and yoga actually means union. So it comes from the Sanskrit word root, and it means union. So as a Catholic, which Catholic means universal, from an outsider's perspective looking in, they may say, oh, yoga means union. Like, of course, that's good. And that actually leads to the first danger of yoga use for a spiritual practice. So yoga, actually, the first thing is it's monism. And what that is it is essentially this understanding that the universe and God are synonymous, and all of us are dwelling in this overall oneness.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Well, thanks for joining us. My guest today, Sue Brinkman, and we are taking a broad look at the New Age movement and the many ways that it is infiltrating, from mind-blanking exercises for your kids in grade school to royals like Prince Harry using EMDR. And that, by the way, is a legit therapy. I don't want to throw that in the same camp. But we've talked about everything from, you know, astral, you know, healing to conjuring the dead. And if you want to get in, we're glad to talk with you. It's 888-914-9149. We just talked a little bit about sage smudging. Smudging's been pretty big. Let me get to the phones because, you know, time is the enemy. I got about 10 minutes left here. I'm going to try to get as many calls as I can on for you, Susan. So let's start. Where was I going to go? Let's go to this Course in Miracles. Jerry is listening in Jacksonville, Florida.
Sure.
No, go right ahead, Jerry.
Yeah. Okay, a friend of mine recommended a book called A Course in Miracles.
Yeah.
He is Catholic, but I think I've heard something about it before, and I told him I wanted to check it out before I accept a book from him on it. And I can't think of a better place to call than the Drew Mariani Show.
Jerry, you're a wise and prudent man, and we have the perfect person to just this Course in Miracles. Susan, let's talk about that. Huge amongst celebrities. A lot of people have bought into it. To me, it's wacky, but I'll let you respond.
Oh, my heavens. This is really bad, really bad. This is a definite no. You don't want to read that book. It's known as the New Age Bible, by the way. That's one of its nicknames. This is how that came about. Helen Schuchman. She was a very prominent clinical psychologist. She was actually a professor who taught Father Benedict Rochelle, who was a psychologist, as you know. She claims that she channeled Jesus Christ and that he dictated the course to her over a period of 7 years. Now, granted, she was an atheist when this was going on. She didn't believe in Jesus. And she claims that Jesus began speaking to her very unexpectedly one day and said something like, "This is A Course in Miracles, please take notes." And it came in the form of an intellectual locution. So essentially the Course teaches that we all live in heaven with God and that our lives on earth are just a bad dream. Maura Noonan writes about it in her book, Ransom from Darkness.
Yeah.
You don't have to die in order to go to heaven. You just have to wake up, is what Maura said. That's how it is. And each of us is exactly and entirely the way God created us to be. We're sinless. We're wholly innocent. There is no sin in there. There's all kinds of distortions about Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit. The entire doctrine of salvation is very distorted. It's a brainwashing program. It starts, it was 365 days of the year. Oprah Winfrey has sponsored this on her show, on her radio show with Marianne Williamson, who was a big advocate of Course in Miracles, big proponent of it. And every day you have to do these little exercises where, say, in the first lesson, you're taught that to say over and over again for a few minutes in the morning and at night, nothing I see in this room right now means anything, or this hand doesn't mean anything, or this table doesn't mean anything. You have to say it over and over and over again. By lesson 96, you're being taught that salvation comes from my one self. By lesson 303, you're chanting, "The Holy Christ is born in me today." It goes way off the rules. And Schuchman, Father Benedict Rochelle writes about this in his book, A Still Small Voice. She had one of the most horrible deaths because she was in the deepest depression he had ever seen anyone at the end of her life. She was in utter darkness. He said it was almost frightening to be with her. He said, "I clearly observed that the denial of the reality of suffering could have catastrophic consequences." And that's what the Course does. It just totally says there's nothing. Suffering is not to be. Is wrong, which is very Buddhist, by the way. So stay away from that book. Don't have anything to do with that book. Nobody channels Jesus Christ. It doesn't happen. Whatever is in there is completely heretical, and you might want to ask your friend to look into this a little bit more and read Catholic critiques of A Course in Miracles to get a better idea of what it is he's recommending to you, because obviously he doesn't have he's not well catechized if he's believing the things in the book or Christian.
All right, sounds great.
Does that help?
Okay,
I hope.
Great.
Yeah, Jerry,
thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it. I'm so glad he called. You got the Course in Miracles. The Secret is a huge thing, and a lot of people think you can, you know, think about being wealthy or finding the perfect lover or whatever it is, and you can will that to yourself. I mean, I think it was a Netflix documentary or something was on. I was surfing by that 6 months ago or a year ago, whenever it was. And I remember seeing it. I started to watch to see what they were doing, but it was so ridiculous. I couldn't even watch it. I'm thinking, how can people buy into this? But I don't think people intellectually challenge some of this stuff. You know, follow it to its logical conclusion. We don't have much time, so let me get this 18-year-old on. Tyson is listening. He likes his horoscope. I want to hear what he's got to say. Tyson, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, Tyson.
I was just wondering what's wrong with like horoscopes if you're reading it for fun.
Yeah.
What's wrong with horoscopes?
Yeah, if you just read it for fun. Some people say, I don't really believe in it, but I'm just going to see what
you should. Don't read them at all. Don't read them at all. You don't need them. Even to do it for fun, no. Don't read it. Horoscopes is based on a Babylonian occult art. It is so ridiculous. It is so unscientific. There's nothing about it that's real. There's no reason to even read it, even for fun. It's nothing but made-up garbage that applies to everybody. In fact, there was a French scientist who sent out to 150 people the horoscope for a serial killer. And he sent it to 150 people, and he said, you know, how many of them related to that horoscope? And something like 90% of them said they related to it. And they only found out later that it was this notorious serial killer. Just, you know, find something better that's fun than reading your horoscope. Because you know what? You might not think so, but it does influence you. And you begin to think, well, you know, maybe my horoscope says something funny, fun's going to happen to me today. You do kind of buy into it in a little way. So you got to admit you do, even a tiny little bit. And it does influence you, and it's just not something that you should be involved in. I would stay away from it completely.
Yeah, people try to read into these things. I mean, horoscopes are one of those. And to your point, I think you're so right. A horoscope violates both reason and faith. They violate reason because there's literally nothing reasonable about them, and they have no grounding in reality. They've shown over and over again to have no validity. And if somebody allows a horoscope to have any influence on their decision, and there are a lot of people that do, that's an affront to the human capacity to think, and that's the problem that we're facing today. You know, I often wonder what happens to trust. People want to look at the stars and let that determine their fate. We have to have faith in God. But here's the thing. You know, when somebody goes to a medium, a fortune teller, they read the horoscope, you're right. You sometimes project that on you. You read into it. Oh, yeah, that's right. That person did say this. Or, oh, that is me. Or, oh, yeah, so-and-so has a birthday. I mean, you begin to read into it. And I think it's a little slippery slope, but I think it's also a waste of time. But, Tyson, thank you for listening. Thanks for calling in. Sarah is listening in Lodi, California. They've got a baby in the NICU. I'll see what they've got to say here. Hi, Sarah. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Hi. Yeah, this is so weird that this happened yesterday, but my little three-week-old, almost four-week-old, is in the NICU, very sick, and there's another family whose little baby is also 3 weeks old and in the NICU, and we've kind of bonded a little bit because of our situation, but they're Hindu, and yesterday they mentioned a mantra that they've been saying for their baby that like brings the dead back to life, and they're including my little Maggie in it because they think they're being lovely. But I mean, I just don't want her to be involved in that. So they wanted me to do it as well, like look it up on YouTube because, you know, I can't pronounce it properly. And so they wanted me to kind of get involved, which obviously I'm not. But I mean, I don't want that stuff around my baby.
Yeah. Well,
so
first
I'm
of all,
just a little torn because they're trying to be so nice. Oh. But I also don't want anything negative kind of around her in her very delicate state.
Absolutely. And I pray for little Maggie that she's going to be fine. And you said you just asked God to protect your little one, and I'm sure he's doing that. As long as you're in a state of grace, God will protect you and yours, and especially an innocent, vulnerable little baby like Maggie. Just make sure you pray to God and ask for that protection. And as far as the Hindus, just thank them so much and just say, well, you know what, I have my own religious beliefs, and these are the prayers that I'm saying, and I would like to include your baby in my prayers.
St. Peregrine, St. Peregrine for their baby, absolutely, and I told them that because I pray for their baby all the time as well.
Perfect.
And so absolutely. I called in last week to the show for the chaplet, and everybody prayed for my little Maggie, so I just really appreciate it.
Well, Maggie, look, we'll continue to pray for you. There's a lot of people listening right now, and I want to ask them all to say a quick prayer, a Hail Mary, an Our Father, a prayer from the heart. And we'll pray for you. As a mother, I can't imagine the torment you're enduring, but I know that little baby in the NICU, prayer changes things. And we'll blanket that beautiful baby in prayer and ask for God's mercy. So
Thank you.
In there, okay? Be at peace. I'm glad you got through
today. Thank you so much.
You got it. My heart breaks for mothers like that. It just kills me. I will pray for you. I promise you. I really will, Sarah.
I know my godson was in a NICU, and I'll tell you what, the big strapping 20-year-old now. You would never know it. I mean, he was really risky. He was, you know, not about to make it. His baptism, when he was baptized, it turned him around.
I love it.
And he finally, like a pound and a half, I mean, he was not supposed to make it. And that little boy, I tell you what, he's bigger than me now.
I love it. Hey, Susan, before we go, because I only have about 20 seconds for you, best way to get your books?
Go to Amazon.com. You get them there.
Just type in Sue Brinkman. You'll find them. They're well worth the read. They should be in your spiritual library. I'm out of time for the day. I really want to thank Sue and thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. I'll be back again. Pray for me. I'm praying for you. Until next time, may God bless you.
Hope restored, hearts healed, lives changed. Here's another Relevant Radio miracle moment.
I can tell you, as somebody that was not as well catechized, a cradle Catholic myself, I have really struggled with my faith. And again, I'm so grateful to Relevant Radio. I mean, the last year of my life has been one most difficult. I lost my marriage and we're breaking, the pain is unbelievable. Mm. But the joy that I get from my spiritual life is the only thing keeping me going. I feel like the scales have fallen off my eyes. Mm. All of a sudden, I'm 50 years old and I'm realizing that my faith has got way more depth than I ever understood.
This miracle moment was brought to you by you.
How has Relevant Radio impacted your life? Make a tax-deductible donation now on the Relevant Radio website or app.
You know, the word is spreading around America. This is the go-to place if you've got a prayer and you want the whole country praying for it. So I invite people to join us every night for the Family Rosary Across America Live.
7 p.m. Central.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media.
Relevant Radio.